session number 10198, Reel 1.
Isabel Lady Dunnington Jefferson, Reel 1. Now, would you be able to tell me a little about your background, where you were born, for example?
I was born in Dublin on the 18th of July, 1911. I was born at 18 North Circular Road, and I was a premature baby of 2 months. And I spent the first 2 months in the famous Rotunda Hospital in Dublin, where I believe I did reasonably well. And then I returned to my parents. My father was a serving soldier in the 5th Royal Irish Lancers. And he was stationed in Dublin at that time. Hadn't joined them very long because his previous regiment was the 18th Hussars. And we lived there until I wasn't very old when we moved up to Scotland, where he had another appointment with the Lovett Scouts.
What about your mother?
My mother was with us, of course, and I had a sister 2 years older than me, so we all moved as a family up to Scotland and lived near Inverness in those days, while my father had this appointment away from his regiment, which was just before the war.
What do you remember about your education?
I was educated at home quite a lot with a educational branch, I suppose. I don't quite know what you call it. It was called the PNEU, Parents National Educational Union, and they sent out syllabuses, and you were taught at home by a governess. But it was all under a syllabus, and you had exam papers sent from the headquarters, which happened to be Ambleside in Cumberland, or Westmorland. And I had that education with my sister for quite a number of years. And then I went to, as a weekly boarder, to a Roman Catholic bar convent in York. And for the last 3 years, I went to a small school in Suffolk. But my education wasn't of a very high level as regards my academic work because I was slightly dyslexic and couldn't really cope with anything in the way of exams. In those days it was called school certificate, I think, and I'm afraid I didn't get very far with that.
What age were you when you completed your education?
Between 17 and 18, 17 and a half, I would think. And I then went to France for 6 months to a very, very isolated part where my father happened to be billeted during the war. Lovely old chateau, place called Mantenay in the Compagne des Aides. Beautiful part, but very isolated. There were three delightful elderly French sisters, and they took English girls, three at a time. But when I was there, there weren't any more girls. There was only myself, and I was there for 6 months. By the time I came back, I'd forgotten how to speak English. But I'm afraid now I've forgotten how to speak French.
What were you actually doing while you were in France?
Just living with them as a family. And walking a lot. They didn't have a car or anything. They were a lovely family, three sisters, and they made cider, and they had Polish men working on the farm. It was a beautiful place, really lovely, but very, very in the country. But I did manage to visit quite a lot of the battlefields which were around there. Etaples.
And what was your impression, do you remember?
Oh, well, very impressed. I mean, it wasn't all that long after the war, and some of the trenches were exactly the same as they had been, so one got a very much better impression of what
had happened.
Could you describe
to me what you actually saw?
Well, one saw still quite a lot of the sandbags all left just as they had been, and parts of ammunition and rifles and things that hadn't all been quite cleared up, because it took an awful long time after the war to reclaim what had been devastated so terribly. And one got a very good impression of what must have happened. And I was intensely interested because it was the part where my father had been with his regiment, and that was why I was at that particular chateau.
Now, when you returned to England, did you take up any sort of occupation at all, any form of employment?
I went home again. We were living in Yorkshire. My father had retired from, well, his regiment had been amalgamated with another regiment, and he had retired from the army then, and he'd taken up another post in York with the remount section, to do with the remount section, and he was the director of remounts for the Northern Command. And I went home, where we were living near York, and I then took course in shorthand and typewriting, and ultimately became a secretary to various things in York. I was secretary to the Friends of York Minster, and I did quite a lot in that way.
Would you mind telling me what secretaries could earn in those days, and also the hours you might have worked?
Well, I used to work from 9 to 5, and I think my first, I was delighted when I got my first salary, which was about £4.50 for the week. I thought that was wonderful.
Now, do you remember the news that war had been declared?
Well, I was married by that time. I was married in 1938, and we were going to be married in London, but with the threat and declaration of war, we cancelled being married in London, and we married very quietly where I was living in Yorkshire, near York, at a little village called Thorgenby. And from that time, it was war, and, well, one just had to carry on and wait for the next declaration of whatever was going to happen.
Had you anticipated war?
Oh, I think everybody had anticipated war. It had been put off momentarily, as one will remember, by Mr. Neville Chamberlain coming over and hopefully thinking there would be no war, but I don't think anybody really thought that it would last, that hope that there wouldn't be any war. No, I think everybody realised that there would be a war.
How did you initially think that it would affect you?
Well, I don't know at all. I don't think I probably thought about it. There was so much going on with evacuees and all sorts of ideas that people were thinking of. And, of course, I had a home to run and that sort of thing. One just really had to wait and see what happened.
Do you remember if you made any particular preparations initially?
No, nothing really.
you tell me how you first heard of the Women's Land Army?
At that particular time, just before I was asked to help with the Women's Land Army, we had evacuees in the house where I was living, Thicket Priory. It was rather a large house, and we had about five, sometimes six evacuees. And they were delightful children, but they did hate being in the country. And we were rather far from the village. They had about a mile and a half to walk to the local village school. And it was rather difficult to keep an eye on them because they wanted to do all sorts of things that, well, country children just didn't do. They wondered where the nearest cinema was and that sort of thing. They weren't used to making their own entertainment in the country. I had them for quite a while, and then I was expecting my first child, and it wasn't very easy to cope with everything and these evacuees. And gradually they didn't like being in the country, and they began to go home. Nobody could stop an evacuee going home if they wanted to. And eventually they all seemed to disappear. Their parents came for them, and they just went home. So we were left without them. And at that time, Lady Graham was working the Women's Land Army more or less for the whole of Yorkshire. And she found it was much too much, and it had to be divided up, as Yorkshire was, in the North Riding, the West Riding, and the East Riding. And she was a friend of my husband who did war agricultural work. He was the chairman of the War Agricultural Committee, as well as being the chairman of the East Riding County Council, and many, many other things too. And she asked if she could come over and stay with us for a night and discuss whether I could help her with the Women's Land Army in the East Riding. She did that and persuaded me that I might be able to help, although I didn't think I knew exactly what to do. And that's how I first heard of it and volunteered to help her in any way I possibly could.
So what were you actually doing in the Women's Land Army?
Well, ultimately we set up our own Women's Land Army in the East Riding. I got a friend of mine, Miss Carmichael, and with the help of the headquarters of the Women's Land Army, which was in Surrey, I think Lady Denman, yes, did it. And we set up an office in York, and Miss Carmichael was the secretary. She also had no previous training of any sort. She was a doctor's sister, but she did a marvelous job. She absolutely made that office and ran it beautifully. But apart from being president of the Women's Land Army for the East Riding, I was also the chairman of the Land Army. And that Lady Graham wasn't chairman in the North Riding. She had a chairman. She was just the president, but I thought it would be nice to be more involved and be the chairman as well as the president. And I worked very closely with Miss Carmichael all through the war with the Land Army. And I think we did very well. Every Tuesday we used to go to Hull and interview girls for the Land Army who had applied to become members of the Land Army, but they had to be interviewed very closely to see if they were suitable and that they really were interested. Most of the girls came from factories, Reckitt's, Coleman's, all sorts of factories in Hull. Some were country girls who wanted to work on the land. They knew a little bit about farm life. But most of the girls came from these factories. And for some reason, they possibly wanted to remain near their homes if possible, or something of that sort, or they weren't suitable for the WAFs or the RAF or whatever that sort. They perhaps weren't medically suitable for that, but they were perfectly able to work on the land and probably beneficial to their particular kind of health problem, whatever it happened to be. And we got wonderful response from these girls. They were marvellous.
What was your criteria when you were interviewing the girls?
Well, there were lots of questions they had to be asked, and whether they realised exactly what hard work meant, because it jolly well was hard work. They had to plough, they had to go on tractors, they had to do thrashing, hoeing, potato picking, everything that the men had to do, mucking out, looking after horses, cows, animals, every sort of farm work. Sometimes they didn't realize quite what it was going to be, and they thought perhaps it wasn't suitable, but mostly they were very happy to sign on. And then...
Would you ever reject any applicants?
Oh, yes, yes.
For what
reasons? Well, perhaps they weren't very suitable looking. They were rather... had more health problems than really would be suitable on the land, even. Or they weren't... They came to find out, and they weren't really very interested, and they thought... Well, perhaps we'll try, and we didn't want people who were only going to try. We wanted people who really meant that they would do it. Although many did try very hard, and perhaps they didn't find they could manage it in the end, but mostly we accepted them. There were more than Miss Carmichael and myself interviewing. We had other voluntary interviewers, because we had many... We went to Hull every Tuesday to the Labour Exchange, and sometimes we'd have up to 100 or 200 girls to interview just in one day. And if we couldn't get through them, because we did interview them very, very carefully, they had to come again the following week.
What was that for?
Well, if we hadn't been able to accept them or hadn't had time to interview them that particular week, and they were still interested, they used to come again the following week, and perhaps there weren't quite so many the following week, and we could get through them.
Yes, sorry, I thought you meant you re-interviewed them the following week.
No.
So after you'd interviewed the girls, what was the next step?
Well, the next step was that they filled in an enrolment form, and it went to the secretary, Miss Carmichael, at the office in York. And... Then we had applications from farmers, four girls. Some farmers wanted two, Dutch farmers in Hull did horticultural work, growing of lettuces, tomatoes, all that sort of thing. And they employed a big number of girls because that was very suitable work for them. And they enjoyed that very much. And then the next thing was, if a farmer or a horticulturalist applied for a girl, we had to go and interview the farmer and see what accommodation he was going to offer them and provide. And he had to realize that they were going to live either in with them as their family, or if they had got billets for them in the village or in cottages, we had to see what they would offer, and we had a standard that we wanted the girls to be looked after according to. And then
was the standard, actually?
Well, they had to be comfortable and as much food provided as they could. They had their own ration books and that sort of thing. We also had hostels over the East Riding in different parts that were provided by the Ministry of Agriculture, and those up to about 40 girls in a hostel with a matron or housekeeper or whatever you like, looking after them. And
what other duties did you have?
I had representatives all over the East Riding who visited the girls, and if there were any problems, or if the girls weren't happy, or if the farmers felt they weren't pulling their weight in any way, or if there were any problems at all, that they got in touch with the secretary at the office in York, and she would deal with things if she could, and she would get in touch with me, and we'd work things out together, and generally go, if there was any big problem, she and I would go along and see the farmer, see the girls.
What would constitute a big problem?
Well, a big problem would be that the girls weren't happy with their accommodation, or the farmers felt they weren't working quite right, or they weren't up to the standard they expected, or...
Were the girls' complaints justified on the whole, do you feel?
Sometimes they were, sometimes they weren't. We didn't have a great number of complaints because we were very careful how we selected the girls to go to different farms, and that is where Miss Carmichael, the secretary, was so very wonderful. She really suited the girls to the farmers, and that's why one had a very detailed entry form and interview, which we did in Hull, and we knew exactly what type of girl might suit an individual farmer, or might be better to work in a hostel, wouldn't be quite so isolated. It was all done through really interview and records.
What sort of questions would you have been asking during the interview?
Whether they wanted to do farm work with a family on a private farm, you might say, or whether they wanted to do work from hostels where the farmers applied for a number of girls for so many days to do the potato picking or the hoeing or something, and they went out in more or less in gangs, four or five to a farmer and four or five to another farmer, but not always on the same farm. Some girls preferred to do that. Some liked the idea of living with the family on the farm and working with them all the time. It just depended what the girl liked or what the farmer wanted.
And what other duties did you have?
I used to go to the War Agricultural Committees in Beverley. They met, my husband was chairman of the War Agricultural Committee, but as the president of the Land Army, I had to attend those meetings, and that happened, I would say, I used to go about once every 3 weeks there to a meeting in Beverley. But I went to the office in York nearly every day, or was in touch with Miss Carmichael or the girls. I had my own girls that I looked after, my own area of the girls that I visited. We had our own farm. We farmed. My husband was a landowner, farmer. And we had four or five land girls on our own farm, and they were billeted in the village. Some of them are still there, actually. They married and have now got grandchildren of their own, still in the same village. And that has happened in quite a number of places in Yorkshire.
And what was it like employing land girls?
Well, they were wonderful. They were very wonderful. There were one or two misfits, naturally, but on the whole, the girls were absolutely splendid. They did the work of men. I can't speak highly enough of the girls that we employed in the East Riding, and I'm quite sure all over England, but I can only speak from experience. And they were very, very good, wonderful.
What problems do you think they had initially, maybe adapting from factory life?
I would think very great problems, but if they really meant to do it and they knew it was war work, I mean, they were supplying the country with food, as we know, and food they ploughed with tractors and all sorts of rough work, and a lot of land had to be reclaimed that had never been arable before, and they got down to cutting down trees and felling trees and tractor work and getting land that had never been grown crops before into proper condition for growing crops. They did everything they were asked to do.
The girls that worked on your land, where was their accommodation? In your home? Or
no, they were in families in the village, very happy. Never gave any trouble at all. They were splendid.
And were you involved in supplying uniform?
Yes, uniform? Oh yes, uniform. We had a uniform department at the office in York, and they were very proud of their uniform. They loved the uniform. It was very suitable for them. Breeches, thick pullovers, Wellingtons, masses of Wellingtons. They had a very good uniform department.
How often could the items be replaced?
Oh, as often as necessary. They could apply for more, and minutes of time I've taken out uniform to girls on farms, both in my own area and all over. And when the thrashing season came along, there were special girls for thrashing, because that was a very dirty job. It was the old-fashioned thrashing machines, not the combines that we have now. They were real old-fashioned, with chaff flying all over the place and dust and dirt. And especially on the wolds of Yorkshire, there was a tremendous lot of thrashing up there. And the girls got through an awful lot of shirts and breeches and things. They really were worn out in no time, because it was such very hard work. And I've been many a time up onto the wolds. In fact, I was up on a farm, a long way, very isolated farm, where there were about 8 girls thrashing. And I suddenly realized that my second baby was almost due. So I thought I'd better get home quickly, which I did, and got home about 6:30 in the evening, I think. My husband was still out. He was deputy lieutenant and doing some work at that time. I forget where he was, and he came in about 30 minutes later. And at 9 o'clock that night, my second baby was born. So that was the sort of thing one did in those days. And I particularly remember that time because I was visiting these girls who were doing a wonderful job of thrashing up on the wolds in Yorkshire.
What other duties might you have had?
Well, I think that was really basically all one did, was to look after the girls and enroll them. And I worked with Miss Carmichael, perhaps rather more closely maybe than other, because she was a personal friend of mine, as well as having taken on this very arduous work of running an office, and we neither of us had ever done anything like that before. I had been a secretary, but I didn't run an office. I was a private secretary, and she had never done anything like that. So perhaps we worked together more closely than, I don't say than we need have done, but we were friends, as well as being running our